What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned in to Kinda Neat, episode number 60 already. That is crazy. 60 motherfucking episodes. We are doing it. First things first, follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man, Ben Shim, behind the boards, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, space with two S's. Follow us as a unit on at That's Kinda Neat. And where you'll see all kinds of updates about who's on the new episode and what videos are out, et cetera, et cetera. YouTube.com/ That's Kinda Neat, where we are going to see my man Ness from Weekend Money perform Hold Up, Hold Up off of the Weekend Money project, Freddie Mercury, which you can go check out at their SoundCloud, SoundCloud.com/ Weekend Money. It's a good project, and I thought this conversation was really great. But before we get into that, make sure you download that podcast app. Subscribe to Kinda Neat. Rate it 5 stars, leave a comment about who you want to see next, et cetera, et cetera. And everything wrapped up in a pretty package on kindofneat.net, which my next higher level goal is to get that site redesigned. So I'm going to do that very quickly. And then, yeah, what else is going on? I quit cigarettes. I quit smoking cigarettes. It's been a month and 3 days and something. It's like, I have it planned out on this app to, it asks like, how many cigarettes do you smoke a day? How many dollars are each pack that you smoke, et cetera, et cetera. And I've saved something like $150 in a month, and I haven't smoked like 440 cigarettes or something. It's crazy. But with that being said, I got fucking sick somehow. Like I usually don't catch colds when I smoke. I think it makes my immune system stronger or something, but yeah, I quit. And, I had this like 3 day head start where we were on a job on a Christian campus where you couldn't smoke and you weren't really supposed to curse and stuff. So I was like, I'm going to use this time to kind of boot camp myself to not smoke cigarettes. And so for those 3 days, I didn't smoke. And then I came home and locked myself in my apartment for 3 more days after that. And it's been going good. I'm doing it. I'm not smoking, and that is perfect. Also, you know, it was Mother's Day recently. This is the Wednesday after Mother's Day that we're recording this. I didn't get my mom anything for Mother's Day. I called her a couple times, made sure she had a good day. Called her in the morning to say Happy Mother's Day. Called her at night to make sure she was cool. I didn't get her anything because I'm actually doing like the sweetest thing ever. She retires this week, and so her retirement party's on Saturday, so I got a free ticket back home to Alaska using airline miles because I'm a broke motherfucker, but I do fly a bit for other stuff. So I got free tickets to Alaska, and I'm gonna surprise her. She doesn't know I'm coming. My brother's gonna pick me up at like 2 a.m in the morning. I'm gonna hide out at his house until the party on Saturday. And you know, I think that I'm hoping that she doesn't have like a heart attack when I show up, but I know that she'll probably at least cry, and that'll be fun. So I'm gonna go back home, and I'm gonna just be there for like 5 days. I'll probably end up just doing a bunch of chores around the house and shit. She'll probably just put me to work. But it should be nice, and it'll be fun. And then I'll get back right on time to post this episode. So I'm speaking from the past and the future at the same time. It's just crazy. So, the guy that we talked to today, Ness, I had a really fucking good time talking to this dude. He's a head like myself that has a lot of skin in the game. And he's a really good rapper, and he has a project out right now under the guise of Weekend Money, where he works with a producer named Baghdaddy. And they made a record that I'm a fan of. I guess their manager type dude reached out to me and was like, hey, I saw that you guys had Hot Sugar and Kitty on, and we kind of run in the same circles, and I think you'll like this. And I listened to it, and I did really like it. So he's out in LA for the week, and we had a great conversation. He actually is in another group called ALX, and they used to work with, or they work with still, Dead Prez and People's Army, RBG, all these things. And so he's got a lot of cool history, interesting upbringing. And it was a good, easy, flowing conversation, so I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So without further ado and any more rambling, let's get into the conversation with my man Ness from Weekend Money. How has your trip to Los Angeles been? Or Southern California, more like.
Exactly. No, it's been great. It's been great. I went, landed in LAX about 5 days ago.
Uh-huh.
I had a show that night with my group, ALX.
At Belasco?
No. This was actually, we did a show at Airliner.
Airliner. Oh, that was on a Friday?
That was on I don't know what day it is today.
Was it Urban Underground?
It might be.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It might have been Gigi.
Yeah, that's Urban Underground. All right,
yeah. So basically, so we did that joint, and then the next day was the one we got booked for, which is the reason why we came to Los Angeles. That was the Belasco on Saturday.
Who was that with?
Public Enemy was on the bill, yeah, actually.
But they didn't perform? Is that what that sounds like?
See, that's why I'm just going through it. Yeah. You know, Mortal Technique, yeah, you know, was there.
Yeah.
Some members of Wu-Tang, Capadonna, You Got.
Uh-huh.
Trying to think. Of course, A Likes, and then we had a few other people there.
Uh-huh.
But Public Enemy didn't show.
Oh, shit.
But it was a lot of confusion with the whole organizing of it. It was supposed to be at UCLA at their space originally, but then it got moved to the Belasco joint.
Like last minute or something?
Like as last minute as you can do it. They ended up having to let it be free.
No shit. That's a big place.
It was a lot going on, man.
Yeah.
All I know is we rocked out. It was, you know, thousands of people there, and it was just a good...
Felt good?
Felt good. Good energy. It was for the United We Stand Festival.
Okay.
And it was some political shit.
Yeah, so, like, was the crowd riotous when they found out that Public Enemy wasn't coming, or what?
I wasn't paying attention to that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Overall, like, the crowd was just super...
They were cool for you guys.
Yeah, they gave us all the energy. Real raucous, ready to, you know, talk shit. You know, they was just feeling it. As a performer, a lot of times you do shows, and people don't notice... know that a big part of shows is the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? People be like, oh, you bombed this show, or you did good at this show. And as performers, we take a lot of credit. Like, yeah, we did it. Yeah, it depends where the crowd is at. If you got a crowd that is in tune with what you spitting or what you bringing to them or whatever, they in a good, you know, good mood, you didn't have them waiting for 3 hours, or they didn't have an opener that messed it up, or just, you know, they just in that right space.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's prime for you to go ahead and go in. So I would say, you know, we did our thing, but the crowd was just super receptive, and I don't know how they felt when Public Enemy didn't perform.
Right. I feel that's a very interesting thing you say, and I feel that a lot of promoters these days don't really understand that like, oh, just because somebody can draw this many people at a show that's, like, well-curated doesn't necessarily mean that, like, if you put them with the wrong other performers, or you put them in front of the wrong crowd, they're not going to draw that same amount of people, or the crowd might not fuck with them as much as this other crowd did. You know what I mean? It, like, really depends on the curation of a show.
That was the word. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say it from the door when you first said it. Curation.
Yeah.
Curating it. Like, knowing what artists match what, you know, not only what audience, but what events.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? What placement, how you, you know, it's all of it is art. So
yeah, absolutely.
We got put in a position with what my group A Likes does.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, very, you know, socio-political, conscious, whatever, you know, box they try to put on it. But we talk shit about the system, and we talk shit about what we live in as, you know, young black males here in America going through shit, whatever. We talk that shit. So
right.
It was perfect for us to go ahead and get on that platform.
And so that's interesting. Like, I just, like I was telling you before we started, I don't do a lot of research. So I just found out that you're in the group A Likes, because I had heard about you because of Weekend Money, which is the project that, when did that drop? Like February?
Yeah, we had a project called Freddie Mercury.
Freddie Mercury.
It's kind of like our debut album, but, you know, it ain't on a major night.
Yeah.
It's just an indie project that's more than a mixtape. You know what I mean?
It's an album.
It's a record.
It feels like an album for sure.
It's like an album.
When did you guys release that?
February.
In February.
So,
okay.
February, yes.
Yeah, so tell me about ALX here, now that we're talking about that, though. Like, is that what you were involved in first?
Yeah, I came up under the RBG, People Army, you know, camp. You know what I mean? That's my introduction into the music industry, if you will. But just those are my homies when I was coming up at that time. And we still, you know, we still fam. And the group was A Likes.
What's,
you know,
RBG?
RBG is Red, Black, and Green. You know what I mean? It's that black power.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That strong, know who we are. We coming. We ain't, you know, we ain't backing down. Like, it's a group of us. You know what I mean? A lot of people attributed to the rap groups or the rappers that were in the collective, you know, ourselves, A Likes, you had Dead Prez, you know, you got different artists, Divine, you got, you know, different people. But it's bigger than the rappers, because it was, you know, like a lifestyle, in the sense that people use the word brand nowadays, you know, loosely, whatever, meaning your lifestyle, how you live. But the music that we brought was beyond just some raps.
Right.
It was beyond just some songs. It was like, you know, we had like a platform for living, for us trying to come up. You know what I mean? We were talking about being healthy, all types of shit. You know what I mean? Community control of our own shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
you know, all types of shit. So that was what I came up under.
Was there a lot of people involved in RBG that weren't necessarily musicians as
yes,
well?
Yes.
And so it's like kind of a movement.
It was a full all out movement. If you did knowledge to it, you know, just, you know, Google shit, whatever, you'll be like, oh, okay.
So
there's basically, you know.
And then I hear you say do the knowledge, like, was a lot of it, did a lot of it revolve around like 5% or stuff, or Islam?
Not RBGs in as a whole.
Yeah.
With Alikes, the term Alikes comes from the 5% nation. You know what I mean? It comes from, you know, terminology that we put together.
Mm-hmm.
So we do use, me and Kay, my partner in Alikes, you know what I mean? When we first got together as a group, our whole thing was we were putting our conversations, building about lessons, building about life itself, building about politics, building about what, you know, young motherfuckers coming up, you know, where our heads was at, you know what I mean, in the 90s. We was like, yo, let's build about this shit. And we put those conversations into music. So, yeah, we say we have a 5%, you know what I mean? We bring some lessons, you know what I mean, how we see them, how we understand them into there. You might hear some terminology. RBGs in general, though, is I wouldn't necessarily say that.
Okay.
That's some 5% shit.
Yeah, yeah. When did you start? Well, I mean, what did they say? When did you find knowledge of self?
I found knowledge of self, I would say, I was 17.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the sense that I finally recognized who I was in the scheme of the world. You know what I mean? Coming up as a, you know, as a child, you learn, you know, who you are to an extent, and you gain a better sense of who you are, your ego, whatever. But I would say for me, I remember, you know, at 17, I got a sense of awareness where I wanted to find out more, and I wanted to, you know, keep going.
And did you meet like a certain sect of people that were helping you find that, or like that were putting you on game? Or
at the time, you know, a lot, you know, hip hop played a big part in it.
Yeah,
you know, things that were in the music, you know, had my mind on some shit. Like, yo, let me get into that. Let me see what that's about. You know, what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So, you know, at the time, you know, in the 90s, you know what I mean? We was listening, like, early 90s, if you will. There was just a lot of...
That was in all the raps.
Yeah, it was just in there, you know what I mean? Like, it was just in there. It was just something that was the vibration.
And you're from New York, yeah?
I'm actually from Philly.
From Philly? Okay.
I'm from Philly, but Phily is 2 hours away from New York.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The energy's there, but Philly's a totally different world than
New York. Right.
But I moved around. I also, you know, like I said, I'm listening to hip hop. I'm hearing things that I'm in there that I'm like, well, what's that about? I'm reading books. Malcolm X, the movie comes out. You know what I mean?
That was
now, you know, we watch that and it's like, it's cool. I want to know more. Now we reading the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Right.
Now we, you know, studying Mao Zedong. Now we studying, you know what I mean, the Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now we going into the Black Panther Party. Now we studying the 60s. Now we going, you know, that's just, you know, I build with a lot of my homies that are in the same wavelength or just even not, you know, just on the same shit, you know what I mean? And they'll tell me a similar story.
Yeah.
Malcolm X comes up, the Black Panthers come up, so.
It's so interesting because even as like a fucking white dude raised in Alaska, which is where I'm from.
You were raised in Alaska,
I was raised
bro?
In Alaska. East Coast rap was so heavy on our radios, you know what I mean? And like that was what we were listening to, and listening to Wu-Tang or listening to J. Rue or listening to whoever, like, you would, it almost sounded like this different language that they're speaking. And then in hindsight, it's all like 5% of knowledge that they're talking about. And like learning about that as I got older was so interesting to me. So I'm like, oh, all of this stuff that I was hearing was part of like the spirituality of the whole thing. You know what I mean?
I would say it's this, there isn't a lot documented about, you know, the 5% importance to hip hop. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Russell Simmons had a chapter, I think, in one of his books. I don't know what book it is. It's, you know, if you read the book and you know the chapter, holla. But
yeah.
Basically,
tweet that.
Yeah, tweet that. But he had a chapter talking about how important the 5% was to the beginning of hip hop, and why he felt. I think what I got from it is he was like, why 5%ers. It lends itself so easily to hip hop. You know what I mean? As a 5%er, you're told, you know, you are the supreme being. You are in control of, you know, what you're dealing with. You can't, you know, things aren't outside of your control.
Yeah,
you know
you're
I mean?
A god, you know.
You know, exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that lends us, that goes perfectly into what hip hop, you know, the
very egocentric.
Yeah, like, yo, I got this. It's me. Yeah. I'm the one. You know what I mean? I'm in control of this right here.
And when you look back,
communicating,
and
I'm building.
Exactly. And even when you look back at some of the early biggest hip hop artists like Big Daddy Kane and shit like that, like, Kane was the smoothest motherfucker out, but a lot of shit is knowledge that he's kicking. A lot of it is 5% or stuff. You know, Asiatic, all that. Yeah, man. What were you up to before you found knowledge of stuff? Like, born in Philly?
Yeah, I was born in Philly. Philly's a hard city. You know
my family's from Easton, Pennsylvania. You know Easton?
It's not far.
Yeah, it's like about
Larry
an hour
Holmes.
And a half.
Larry
yeah, Larry Holmes,
Holmes
exactly.
Larry
my mom Holmes. Went to the same high school as him a couple of years after.
You know?
Yeah.
Larry Holmes.
Yeah.
That's all I know about Easton.
Yeah, shout out.
But yeah, man, Philly is a hard city. You know, when I say hard, like hard working, hard, like, you know, motherfuckers is just serious, you know what I mean? Along with that, you have, you know, the murder rates all crazy and shit, you know what I mean, coming up, drugs, all that shit. But Philly has a beauty as far as just, you know, that came out of, you know, that birthed out of me, like, you know, my energy, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I just think about that time.
Yeah. How long did you live there?
I was born in Philly, and then basically when high school was a wrap, I left.
Oh, you so know? You were there your whole childhood, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what were you into as a kid?
I was into drawing, my own comic book shit.
Really?
I was heavy into, like, drawing. I was been into Japanese animation shit.
I feel like a lot of rap dudes are into comic books, man. That's a theme that I get out of doing these.
It's like a world. Like, I'm on the real, I still go back into that space that when I write certain raps, or better yet, when I put together projects, when we're like sequencing an album or whatever, I go back into that space that I used to go to when I used to make up my own little...
You think about paneling it?
About my own little comic books, exactly, like how, just how this song goes into this, and now it's like a world.
Right.
With comic books, you're basically making a world.
Yeah.
If you're doing this hip-hop shit right, you know what I mean? And when I say right, how I like it, so this is my opinion, I like bars where you just spit a bunch of punchlines and, you know, you know, phonetics, you killing the beat, you la da da da, you know, you just rapping, whatever. But what I really appreciate is, like, a world, you know what I mean? Like, De La Soul had a world. Like, Mobb Deep had a world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Wu-Tang had a world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, Nas had a world. Like,
Tribe.
A world. A world, a space.
Mm-hmm.
A place where, like, you live in there. You know the characters in that world. You know the feelings of that world, whatever. So, that's the same shit. Comic books.
Yeah.
Raps, you know?
You know what's interesting is that comic books were some of the first, that's some of the first leisure time reading that I got into as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember specifically because my dad said, if you want to learn big words, read comic books. It's like, they got all kinds of big words in comic books.
Yeah.
And like, that shit definitely like expands your vocabulary as well, I think, beyond just like creating worlds. I think you accidentally learn a lot of shit reading comic books.
I'm trying to think. My introduction to comic books, to throw it out there, I just remember, like, cool older cats, like, hood cats that could draw dope shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And how, like, dope it was to just see them, like, draw, like, I remember, like, Robotech was out or some shit. Some old crazy shit. And cats was drawing exact shit.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I said shit 1,000 times in this interview.
It's all good. I say shit a lot, too.
But it was, like, it's a bunch of... just, you know.
Yeah, so you're seeing the older cool cats doing that, and then they're putting you up on game on, like, oh, read this book or what?
Just kind of like following up behind them.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, so that's what that
Which
is.
Ones are you into?
Over the course of time, Spider-Man was dope.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He got dope after a while. X-Men shit.
Yeah, I fucked with that. I was a big part of the X universe. Like, I like that
X-Factor.
Yeah.
Spawn, when that came about. I was following the artist, the dude, Todd McFarlane.
Yeah.
Who did Spider-Man when he was like the black suit Spider-Man, and then he just
Venom and all that shit.
Venom, all that. Yeah. But the way he used to draw him was crazy. And then he moved
broke
over
to
Spawn.
Remember when Spawn had a Showtime show?
Yeah, for
animated
a bit.
Showtime show. That shit was kind of hard.
It was cool.
I fucked with it.
It was alright.
Yeah. That was like when I was in high school, I think. So you're in Philly. Did you ever get into like sports stuff?
Yeah, I'm heavy in the ball, like basketball.
Yeah, you play basketball.
I like basketball. I played, I don't think I even played in my high school.
Mm.
Yeah, I was fucking up by high school. Like, but I definitely I'm into like sports and shit.
Yeah, yeah. How many generations deep was it in Philly? Like, how long has your family been out there?
Not long.
Nah.
My father was the first. Like, yeah. He came out there from New York.
Okay.
But my father's from Montserrat. He's a West Indian.
Okay.
So he came from Montserrat to New York.
And then moved out to Philly. What did he do to keep a roof over the head?
He was an electrical engineer.
Oh, okay.
Pop was an electrical engineer, electrical contractor. Like, had his own little business where he would, like, put up, like, your whole electric for your business and shit. Like,
Okay.
You got, like, a garage or, like, a telephone, you know.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah, what did mom do?
Mom, when they were together, my mom held down, the crib.
My you got a lot of brothers and sisters? Or?
I got a long story, but my mom and pop got three. You
okay.
know what I mean?
But yeah.
I got extended because I got my father's whole... Like, my father had a lot of other children.
Right.
My brothers, just the same way, or sisters, same way.
Okay.
But, long story.
Yeah.
So, that's what...
As a kid, how many people did you have in the house?
So, coming up, it was me and my two little sisters.
Okay.
In Philly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In North Philly.
Yeah.
With my mom. And then when my mom and my pop separated, my mom's from Dominican Republic, came up, what people would call third world,
when did she come over to the States?
She came over to the States with my pop.
Oh, okay.
Like, my pop met her in DR and was like, you coming back and you're not going to be dealing with this. You're going to be over here.
Yeah.
So she was with that.
So he was like in DR working and stuff and then was like, I'm going to the States. You're coming.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep.
That sounds like a very romantic fucking sentiment.
Yeah, within that is a bunch of fucking plot-thicking shit.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Nah, that's why I'm here.
Yeah, so they get over to the States, you're living in Philly, and then they split, and who do you go with?
I kind of go with my mom, but I got sent away to some institution for, children for disadvantaged youth. How would I explain it?
Is it like a boarding school?
Kind of like a boarding school, but it wasn't like, boarding school is usually like you got somebody rich as shit.
Yeah.
Sending their child to school. This is something that was for kids from the hood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or kids from certain situations, whatever. And they got the aptitude, they could fit some shit, so they're going to
Right, right. So you were probably a pretty bright kid.
I'm a genius on the low, bro.
No, I believe it.
I'm a genius.
I always think that everybody that has a penchant for fucking putting words together in rhythmic patterns is smarter than they would ever put on, you know what I mean?
Like, genius.
Yeah, I believe it. So you're excelling in school at a young age, and people are picking up on that.
No.
Come on.
Nah, nothing like that, actually. No, some real shit. It wasn't all out like a juvie joint, but it was basically somewhere where I could go where my mom, who didn't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I was like 8.
Yeah.
And I was smart enough to be like, you know what, mom, I know, you coming from DR.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Shit is real. You up here in Philly, it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
You got my two sisters, they babies. You know what I mean? Now you're on your own. So I like rationalized, calculated everything, said boop, boop, boop. As an 8-year-old, real rap. She was like, yo, you want to go to the school? Show me a brochure.
Yeah.
He's like, they cover everything, blah, blah. It's going to be good for you type shit.
So when you say it's not like juvie, like you weren't getting in trouble, it was like a good thing that you went to this.
It was a combination of the circumstances weren't good.
Right.
But it was kind of like trying to put a spin on it. Like, you can't afford to do some shit that you want to do for your child. This school is something that they'll take care of this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not going to be the whole city, it's going to be certain kids that's going to make it through.
Right. So how was it when you moved to there?
I hated that shit.
Why?
Because I wasn't with my mom and I'm 8.
Yeah.
I'm bugging them.
Who was there to comfort you?
It's not just, you that's the type of shit that just builds who who you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think about all that's connected. You know what I mean? All that's connected. Like, I have a certain level of independence, there's mad shit.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Well, fuck, man. What's that like going there as an 8-year-old? Is it a lot of other 8-year-olds
or
are you staying with other fucking older kids or what is that?
No. It's basically sectioned off into age,
groups.
So it's like, we in third grade.
Yeah.
So we had third grade dorms.
Was there a lot of kids? I mean, were all the kids kind of the same socioeconomic background or was it varied or what?
No, it was basically, to get into school, you either had to have you needed to either be an orphan or from a broken home and make under a certain amount. like that's what it was. It was a school
in
North Philly called Girard College. Wow. It's like it had walls around it.
Yeah.
And it was a benefactor named Stephen Girard back in like
it was
the
kind
1700s left some money for some war veteran kids.
Okay. Was it like very militaristic and like scheduling? Like, okay, be up for breakfast at this time. Fucking
definitely. It wasn't you know, we just skipping through and, you know, like some progressive shit.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily military though, but it was definitely like schedule. We, you know, we rocked in dorms.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we, you know, where we stayed at would be like 25 kids in a large ass room with a bed.
Bunch of bunk beds or what?
Not bunk beds, but like a bed. Now my shit.
Yeah.
Like not the one I was at, but a bed with like a chair next to it and a bundle with your thing. So it was slightly, it was definitely institutional.
Yeah, you know what I mean? No shit.
You're in an institution.
Yeah.
And then you would go to the cafeteria, get your food, you get your, you know what I mean? Like, you got a record.
Did you make friends easy there?
The first like 2 months, I was just not having it. I was getting into mad, like, not even shit with other students. I was going at it with authority because I was kind of like
rebelling.
Like, y'all not my mom.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not necessarily wilding for no reason. Like, I don't understand the concept of how, why you telling me whatever. So the first 2 months was wild. Like, I just remember, I don't remember anything, but I just remember it was some shit. They were like, are you sure he can handle this?
Because
he's not rocking. Like,
yeah.
you aren't going home every day.
Right, right.
You're going home once a month.
Oh, so you got to see your folks once a month.
You could.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, for the orphan kids, they didn't, but everybody else.
Right, right, right.
You know, you would go see your mom for, like, a weekend and then come back. And then we would have, you know, all different vacations. But, yeah. But that shit was, that shit built me.
Yeah. It's crazy. I picture it as, like, some Lord of the Flies shit. Like, once the lights go out, it's like the fucking clicks form and stuff.
Shit is real. Like, there was a lot of real shit, like, you know.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of, kids in North Philly.
Yeah. How long did you stay there?
I was there for, I think, 4 years, 5 years.
4 years. Wow. So you go.
I was there till eighth grade.
From eighth grade. Wow. And then do you move back with moms or what?
Nah, it got crazy. I went to another joint.
Why?
Because I didn't like that joint.
Yeah. Oh, so you just went to another, like, boarding school type thing.
Yeah, but it was a little further out.
Where at?
It was in Hershey.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So then,
oh, yeah. My fault. I'm acting like we in the East Coast.
No, it's all right. I'm vaguely familiar.
Hershey, PA. We're in Pennsylvania. Okay. So now we're a little further out. It's another joint.
And how was that one?
My brother had went to it, so I knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little older than me. Mm-hmm. It's more loose as far as the setup.
Mm-hmm.
You can wear your own clothes. I remember that was big.
Oh, because you were all in uniform that.
Yeah, and the other joint, we had like straight unis.
And was it all boys? All boys?
No.
So you had girls there too?
Yeah, girls.
Okay.
So, we used to have some wild shit with girls, too.
I was about to say, like, I feel like...
it would get crazy. Because we had this shit called hooking out. It's a lot of shit. Like, there's thousands of... Like, I'll be building with certain cats that went to similar situations. Yeah. And, like, it's funny how we would use similar terms for similar shit. They'd be like, oh, you call it hooking out? We should call it hooking in.
Yeah.
I'd be like, what the fuck is hooking come from? Like, all right, maybe that's some, like, 50s shit in the military or some shit.
Right, right.
But, yeah.
So, I would imagine if you're in a school like that away from the folks and it's mixed gender, you got to probably be learning stuff pretty early there.
Kind of. I mean, because bottom line, like, when I talk to other people that grew up in a household with their mother, father, whoever, and then I look at my coming up, like, it's some other shit. Like, we were basically grown people with, like, it was like grown people in jail, like similar situation. Like you get to do what you know, you don't got your mom over you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Your mom is the one that's going to like watch everything that you're doing to make sure that you're still a kid or your father or whoever. Like these people are just kind of like making sure they're getting a check. You know, some would care. They're not letting kids just fuck.
Right.
They're not like just letting things happen, whatever. There's still a level of repression.
Right.
Like an adult in jail.
Yeah. Did you understand that at the time? Or is it something that you figured out in hindsight of like, oh, wait, that was kind of like a fucking penitentiary type thing?
I always look like I talked to some of my people that classmates that I went to the same thing, and we got different, very different
interpretations
of it. But then again, we different people. I'm Ness from, you know, from Weekend Money. I'm Ness from Air Likes. I'm the dude that I'm a rebel. I say certain things.
Right.
You know, something like, yo, it was a good structure. You know, we needed things like that.
That formed me into the fucking man that I am today.
And I'm saying that on a different level. Like, it definitely built me. But nah, man, like.
You couldn't, like, leave the premises if you wanted to and shit.
No, you can't. They had the one spot I went to had walls.
Oh, wow.
Physical walls. Like, some cats would try to jump over. But it wasn't that.
Yeah.
It was real, but it wasn't like, you jump over, they'll find you.
Yeah,
and if they
don't,
then your parents or whoever's in charge of you needs to
figure
out how to deal with this dude's running over.
Were there classes that you started excelling in early there?
Art.
Yeah.
Social studies. Shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, I like history.
Yeah.
I like to draw. And I'm not really, I wasn't into math like that.
Were you guys finding music?
We had, like, music classes, but I never connected it as something that I wanted to do.
But, I mean, like, were you guys getting to have, like, Walkman and shit?
Oh, we had, we could have, like, a Walkman, but, like, our music was censored.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So they'd be like, well, what do you have?
If it's parental advisory, it ain't coming in here.
It was serious. Like, I remember trying to have my little Ice Cube shit.
Oh, right.
And my little, like...
Like Predator or fucking America's Most Wanted?
The hell. Worst one.
Yeah.
The one where he talking about shooting police.
Right, okay.
That one wasn't flying in the student home or in the dorm or wherever I was at the time.
Right. What were kids listening to in there?
Listening to, some... Nas when his shit first dropped. But even go back to shit like Snoop.
Oh, yeah.
In the East Coast, Snoop was big as hell.
Dude.
He was big everywhere.
I try to... You know, that Doggy Style was the biggest selling rap record, like the biggest week one debut of a rap record ever. The first rap record to enter the charts at number one ever.
Yes.
I try to put in perspective, like, there hasn't been a rapper whose debut was like... as anticipated as Snoop's, I don't think, ever since then. Maybe Drake or something? I don't know. Like,
nah, there's a couple. Like, you know, I'll say 50 at one point had some crazy shit going on. Eminem was
I don't know
record.
That 50, like, I don't know. Like,
that first 50 record, like, it wasn't Snoop.
Yeah.
Snoop caught the world by, like, Snoop and Dre.
Well, The Chronic came out and, like, obviously, like, murdered everything. And it was like everybody realized, like, oh, wait, this guy, fucking Snoop, is, like, kind of carrying this record and he doesn't have his own solo project out yet. So I think that's why it was, like, so heavily anticipated, you know?
I love that record.
It's amazing.
Like, as an East Coast MC coming up in the 90s, like, we've kind of fell away, at least me and, you know, some of us, like, we fell away from even, like, anything besides real hardcore East Coast boom bap shit. Mm-hmm. And I think it's almost to a fault. Like, we would be, you know, like, oh, hip hop is real if it's this certain sound.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think about, like, 93, 92, those years and shit, when I think way back, and I'm thinking, like, you know, as a youth, like, trying to learn about music, that Snoop Dogg record, that Chronic record.
Huge.
Huge.
So, like, influential as well.
Huge. So
I was looking at, like, 93 was a big year for me with rap music. I feel like that was when I, like, really started realizing, like, what it is that I like about it.
Right.
And that's when two of my favorite records came out in that same year, which is 36 Chambers and Doggy Style. It's like you said, they both create their own world, but they're, like, completely fucking different worlds, yet they both just, like, made my head go fucking bananas.
I'm trying to think of any other records. Ice Cube.
Yeah.
You know, people, and you know, the whole NWA thing, but I remember Ice Cube was just weird, like, and crazy.
A big one for me was Scarface the Diary, too.
That was tough.
That was a big one. I think that was either 90, I think it was 92.
Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, Low End Theory was a big one for me.
Midnight Marauders. I mean, Low End Theory, definitely.
Yeah.
But I remember when Midnight Marauders came out.
Yeah, Midnight Marauders was the first one that I got into them. And I remember it was because of the award tour video. I used to see that on UMTV Raps and just be like, whoa, you know?
Yeah,
for sure, man. Yeah. So music is coming into the schools and stuff. And so, yeah, when you switch and all of a sudden you're getting to, like, wear your own clothes and stuff, how are you keeping up with, like, what was cool if you're, like, in a uniform for those first 4 years? Like, would you go home for the summers or anything?
Well, the first one, I just wasn't even, I was way out of cool.
Right.
Like, I mean, I was cool in the sense that, you know, I wasn't a punk.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I could, like, I had some, you know, I had jokes and shit.
Yeah.
Whatever was important to kids at the time. Like, I had a couple of those things, but I just didn't have, like, the new sneakers.
Right.
None of that new shit. None of that expensive shit. None of that, none of them sweatsuits. None of that. Like, when people look back at, like, the the late 80s or the early 90s or whatever, like that whole time, none of that shit. I had none of it. Adidas, none of it. I couldn't afford it. So, like, I wasn't even on it like that. But once I got to, like, you know, a certain age, I was trying to impress girls or whatever. So I would figure out some way to have my own style.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? We found out a little Jabot jean, a little Eddie Bauer, some shit.
Right.
So whatever the fuck we was trying to wear. A little Tommy Hilfiger shit. Now polo, now we throwing this on, whatever. So you would just figure out your style like that. But you really soak up a lot when you went home.
Uh-huh.
Like you went home for like that weekend,
yeah,
or for Christmas vacation.
So was it like a year round thing? You guys were going to school year round, and then just getting that one weekend a month off.
Well, no, the summer we would get off.
You would get the summers off.
Summers off, and then as you got older, you got more.
Yeah,
you got more. You got to go home.
When you would get the summers off, you get home, would it be like, oh shit, he's back? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
and then that's when you're soaking up. Like when everybody else is just doing the. Of course we wear that, because that's how we, you know, subconsciously, they don't even know where they picked up some shit. We come home, we like, wait, what the fuck? Everybody wearing red sneakers?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Oh, they doing it because of that. Oh, that's the way you doing the collars.
Right.
Oh, word. Oh, this is how we doing that? Cool. Maybe I don't like that. I'm going to wear it my way.
Right. So you soak that up and then take it back with you and maybe modify your uniform a little bit or some shit?
Yeah, and then the fact that you away from it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like how I was watching this documentary, totally left field, but I was watching this documentary where they talked about how the English rock stars from, like, you know, the first rockers that were so in love with American rock and roll and blues. And,
yeah, and the black, Stones and stuff.
And really into, like, black
Joe Cocker.
So they were trying to...
20 Feet from Stardom, is that what you're talking about?
Nah, no. But that's a good one. That's a great documentary.
Yeah.
But they were trying to emulate their favorite, you know, like
Muddy Waters. Musicians. The Stones loved Muddy Waters.
Because of the separation, because they weren't, they didn't quite get it, it created something else.
Right.
You know what I mean? Long, crazy analogy, which saying, like, I would have my own gear when I would be in Philly, like soaking up shit during vacations, and I'd get back and do my own crazy interpretation of the way, and then come back, niggas would be like, what are you doing?
Right.
Like, you are on your own shit.
That's so funny.
If we could follow that at all.
Nah, similarly to just like on some fucking creating rapport and relating shit, like living in Alaska, no one is.
It's weird, right?
I'm going home.
Alaska?
I'm going home tomorrow, actually, or on Friday.
Live there now?
Nah, I live here. I've lived in LA for 7 years, lived in California for like 12 years. But growing up there, like, no one's from there unless you're like a native Alaskan, you feel me? It's like a lot of people end up there because of the military. So my dad joined the military. They were both from the East Coast. And so we move up there, and my brother and I are both pretty much raised up there. But since no one is from Alaska, when you're in the military, like people, or like when your dad's in the military, you would like claim where your family was from. So it was like I had my grandmother lived in Southern California. And so during the summers, we would come on vacation to Southern California. So I would go home and I would have all the like fresh SoCal gear, and fools would be like, oh damn, where'd you get that? And I'm like, oh, I got it in fucking Los Angeles. Like, what's really good? You
I'm
know what
from
I mean?
LA.
Yeah,
bitch.
Exactly. So it was like, that was the shit. It was like, oh, Lee's like a fucking, you know, it was like, I was like a poser fucking Southern California surfer dude, but it was like, that's where we would go learn our style is like during the summer vacations. You know what I mean?
Right.
Then go home and blow people's minds in Alaska.
AB. So, I mean, you know, transplant shit.
Yeah, exactly.
You figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. So you graduate high school or what?
Yeah, I actually did graduate. Yeah. Barely. I broke the record for detentions in my high school.
Get out. Why?
I don't know, man. The fucking,
smart aleck?
A combination of I move on my own clock, still do, working, you know, there's something I need to work on, but fuck it.
Yeah.
I just would be always in the hallways. That was one of my rhymes. Always in the hallways.
Yeah.
Just, you know what I mean? I get into class, I'm late, whatever. Then it would turn into some just acting out shit. And then a few times I'll spaz out on teachers.
Mm.
Mainly because they stressing me about some shit I'm not trying to hear. It's not necessarily like I was all the way wilding, but I was dibbing and dabbing, getting my detentions here and there. And then I remember my last year, my hall monitor, who was like in charge of the fucking detention shit, was like, yo, do you know, let me show you this, as long as we've been keeping these records, you got the most detentions of anybody that's ever been here. I was like, that's because everybody else got kicked out that gets to a certain point.
Yeah.
And he's like, how you think it's funny? Next one, like, we're going to put a cap. If you make it past this, you're not gonna make it out of here. Like,
right.
It was some old, like everybody was trying to get me out.
Right.
And I made it till like the last week.
and didn't get that last detention to push you over.
But I think, like, it was a weird thing where, like, I graduated, but then they gave me, I got a detention, and then he was trying to, like, not let me walk.
Wow.
It was amazing.
That's funny.
I graduated.
Like, with people, the more we talk about it, the more I'm, like, starting to relate it to, like, this actual kind of juvenile center type thing, and I'm thinking, like, were people trying to, like, smuggle drugs in and shit? Like, how would you guys play with weed when you were kids, you know what I mean?
We just did. It came, man. I mean, it was locked down, and they was going through shit, and they found shit. And it wasn't like we had rampant drug dealing in the school. But, like, I smoked my first weed, like, at Hershey Park in the back of, like, one of the roller coasters because, you know, they would let us get, like, you know, that was one of the things when you went to that one school
I
was talking about. We would just go to Hershey Park for free some shit. So I smoked my first weed at, like, 14 or some shit.
So what happens after high school? Did you have plans for college? Did you do that?
I wanted to get the fuck out of Philly.
Yeah. Where did you want to go?
Anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's not that Philly is bad. It's just I was ready to be out.
Yeah.
And actually, Philly is bad in the sense that, you know, it's just a lot of, you know, definitely all the killings and all the, you know, inner city
shit. The city of brotherly love, it was big news back in the mid-90s when it was the murder capital of the country.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have that whole situation. But it wasn't like I thought about that first. I just thought about I don't want to stay here. I don't want to see the same shit. I want to see the world.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in these institutions back to back, and like I want to fly. I want to go everywhere, anywhere, whatever. So I was trying to find the furthest place out. I ended up going to Florida.
Oh, really? What part?
Tallahassee.
I'm not a big fan of Florida. Sorry, Florida people.
It's all good.
Yeah.
All good. I mean, you know, I'm when I went down there, I was just trying to get out. So I ended up going to school down there.
What part of the state is Tallahassee in?
It's like the panhandle.
Okay, so it's down towards the bottom or what?
Mm-mm.
Or no, like that. So that's
the handle.
Tallahassee is like deep south then. It's not really like Florida. That's more like the bottom of Georgia or something, right?
It's some red clay ass shit.
Yeah.
It's some old Spanish moss on the tree shit. It's not no palm tree shit.
Right, right.
It's not sexy. It's not sexy Florida.
So how was it going there?
It was, you know, in the East Coast, like, the cats that come from up north down south usually have like a condescending, like arrogant tone, like, oh, we're the shit. We bringing flyness and swag and, you know, up to date shit to y'all type shit.
Right.
And I was a young kid, so I was down there like feeling that energy, like, oh, whatever. Mm-hmm. Until I like started running into different, you know, just cats that was real, that was from down there, that I was just like, oh, okay, this is the first time I'm seeing a different swag, a different energy, a different style, but might have the same character traits that I respect as a person.
Mm-hmm.
So real, you know, you a real dude, I'm fucking with you. You're a real chick, I'm fucking with you. And then I just started like breaking that down and learning a lot about, you know, what's really real,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to just, you know, your little town's coolness or swag.
Right. What took you to Tallahassee?
I ended up going to Florida A&M.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I went down there.
Nice. And like when do you start rapping?
In high school, like the last couple of years, like, I would play with it. Philly wasn't big for having like a bunch of MCs coming out of Philly.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't something like where in New York, maybe, you know, you might be from Queensbridge or Marcy and you know that Nas or Jay-Z or whoever's from your projects is on the radio. It gives you certain incentive,
right,
or certain motivation to be
you
like.
You guys just had Will Smith.
Yeah, we just had fucking Fresh Prince. We had a bunch of like not too big, but very influential in Philly, like EST and Three Times Dope, Schoolie D.
Boyz II Men.
Oh, man. Jesus Christ. Boyz II Men.
ABC. BBD. The East Coast Family.
That shit.
Yeah.
But, I didn't really take it seriously in high school. I was just doing it. But when looking back, it was the foundation.
It was like lunchroom, like lunch table shit.
Yep. Yeah. And to be honest, that a little bit, but more like just me writing raps.
Okay.
Like, and not really saying it to nobody because nobody wants to be taken as the dude in high school who's trying to do some shit that's facetious and crazy. Because we're from Philly and no, we're not going to be rappers and shit.
Right.
Just cut it out type shit. So I would write my little raps. When I left Philly, I had a little bit more confidence than like, oh, I don't got like my peers that I came up with right around me. maybe I could just throw this shit out there.
Right. All of a sudden, you're feeling like you move from the East Coast down to Florida, bigger fish in a smaller pond type of thing, or what?
Kind of. But I would say no. I mean, I'm kind of just filling that in. I just didn't. I was trying things anyway. I was down there, out of town.
Right.
Young, you know, young dude learning about shit, starting to get into, like, just mad different.
Yeah. Did you have any family down in Florida?
Oh, yeah, I did have family down
nice.
In Florida.
Nice.
Yeah,
okay, so you had, like, a little foundation down there, too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. How long did you stay there?
I was there for a year and a half.
And then what?
And then I got out of there. This is actually super critical right here. In the year and a half, 2 years, actually, that I was there, I ran into my comrades that I ended up, like, you know, kind of like why I'm even here in front of you.
Yeah.
To an extent. It led me in this direction.
This is where you met the guys from ALI?
Yeah. I met my partner, Kay.
Okay.
From, you know, in the group ALIKES. We learned a lot about different things. We were studying 5% lessons at the time, mm-hmm. like I was building about.
Mm-hmm.
And we was just, you know, just connecting, like, oh, okay, that's what you think about this shit, that's what you think about this shit. And we decided to put that into our music and or even record, because he was a rapper. I was aspiring. I wanted to, you know, put something out there. When we first linked up, I remember he was like, do you know how to count bars? I was like, what the fuck is a bar?
Right.
I don't know nothing about that shit.
Right.
So, but I also met, you know, my homies from Dead Prez, Sticking in One,
okay.
you know, through Tallahassee, Abu and Tahir.
Oh, they were down there as well?
Yeah, they were down there. Stick is from Tallahassee or the area.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and Emin was going to school down in FAM. FAMU.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So the universe kind of brings you guys all together.
Basically, I mean, we're here now, so yeah, it brought us together.
That's interesting. No shit. So
the story is, there's way more layers. I've told that story 1,000,000,000 times.
I was gonna say, and I feel like if I would have picked that, like, year and a half to do an hour long interview about you, I'm sure you could fill it up, that space, with just stories from there.
Before we talked, you was like, yo, I'm gonna build about a lot of shit that's random almost, but it's all real. This interview right here is rare.
Yeah.
I give you that. You got the rare interview. Some of the things that I've never really talked about, I talked at length. And that story is a story that I've told many times. Like,
right.
They're like, well, how do you, you know, Dead Prez, okay. How did you guys link up? We linked up in Tallahassee. Right. How do you link up? Well, there was heads in the attic. It was a house. There was an attic. Cats used to be in the attic. Rabbit.
Right. So basically, if you guys want to hear more about that story, Google my man, and you guys will find it.
Yeah. Likes.
Yeah, for sure. So things start building in Tallahassee. You guys are forming RBG.
RBG is what we ended up calling it, but it was people. Right. Just People Army at first.
People Army. Yeah. And then, like, but you say you only stay there for a year and a half, so where do you disband to?
We all come to New York.
Everybody migrates together?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
It was basically a good, like, 9 of us.
Yeah. What year is this approximately? Like, early 2000s?
This is late 90s.
Late 90s, okay.
Yeah, late 90s. And moved up. Dead Prez.
And this is when there was still, like, money in the music industry too. So, like, were labels hollering at you guys?
Well, the thing is that if you know our music, the things that we're talking about, very rare.
Yeah,
very rare.
And it was like,
it was very
revolutionary.
Revolutionary, if you will, but definitely somebody that's thinking dollars and cents, unless they have foresight and they can, like, they got vision, they won't see the money in it.
Yeah.
They'll be like, wait, are you trying to shut the system down? Fuck this, fuck that. You don't want to be on the radio. You don't want to, like, I don't understand the value.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a more business revolutionary time, not revolution for real, but business,
right.
Where, you know, Apple is, you know, doing revolutionary things that have showed that'll lead you to be one of the top, you know, companies, as opposed to doing the tried true bullshit that been going.
Right.
Like, now we're dealing with a space where people respect, you know,
that thinking outside the box type
exactly
thing.
But in the 90s, that shit
was, there was a formula.
Yeah, the fact that Dead Prez got their deal was like, everybody was surprised.
And I feel like if there is a group ever that people were surprised at such a huge hit, it's probably, like, no, I don't think anybody thought that Dead Prez would have such a huge fucking song that's still, like, you put that on at any rap show and people still fucking go apeshit for it to this day.
I remember when that record was made.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the day Stick I think maybe Tahir actually played it for us. Tahir was producer. If you look at the credits of Let's Get Free or any of the Dead Prez albums, Tahir is Head Rush.
Yeah.
Him and Abu, who came up with us from Tallahassee, our Head Rush, our production company.
Okay.
So Ty had like this special dope like sound that he was fucking with. He made it a special way. I can't tell y'all.
Right.
I'll be, you know, somebody will cut my hands off. But he had this sound, this that he just made it. You know, he made it. And Stick was just amazed with the shit. So them two together working on the track came up with some shit. And I remember when I heard the beat and I heard like the first like skeleton shit to it, I was like, what? I was like, oh, y'all gonna do the Down South shit? That's dope. Cause this is the 90s when, you know, even though we from Down South technically, we was up north. We was on Loud, Records.
Yeah, and that was a sound that was associated with like, that was an East Coast collective.
Exactly. Yeah. And also Loud Records, which is, you know, Wu-Tang, Mobb Deep, Big Pun is an East Coast, you know, powerhouse.
Yeah, Steve Rifkin just killing shit.
And we're doing kind of a double time, you know.
Yeah.
One thing about music, when it hits you, feel no pain. White folks say, control your brain. I know better than that. That's that shit.
Right.
And niggas is like, oh, but y'all kind of from Tallahassee because y'all can't. Oh, okay, we're going to push it like this. I remember, like, as soon as the label heard that shit, you know, we would hear all the information through the homies. Like, yo, they love it. They want to make this a single. And there was a couple of years they were trying to stress it. Let's get a single or some shit.
Yeah.
Now, you know, take it from me. Like, I remember all this shit. Yeah. I smoked a lot of weed. I don't know.
Right, right, right.
I remember this, though. Yeah. I remember this shit.
So you heard it, you just knew it was a hit?
I knew it was gonna rock. I just thought all this shit was dope.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Anybody who came up in New York City underground in the late 90s remembers, like, you know, what People Army was doing, what, like, Dead Prez was doing, like, there were certain records that really never hit the world that were just amazing, goosebump, bone chilling, make you want to start the revolution right there. East Coast, like real dirty pianos, Lord Jamar half working on the beat with Stick doing some real murky, amazing, apocalyptic, the hood is here shit. You know what I mean? Not like. It was a perfect, like, for me, that was, like, my favorite shit from what their president was doing. So when we was in that space, it was just a real fun time.
Yeah.
And I remember the smells. I remember the, like, things that were around, the people that were there, that were around. You know, I remember the video we did where Prodigy from Mobb Deep was in the supermarket with us robbing, like, we had this video for this joint called Food, Clothes, and Shelter.
Yeah.
That Dead Prez did. And it was basically, like, apocalypse hit in a certain sense. Uh-huh. Not in a biblical sense, but, like, in a real sense. And we had to, like, rob a grocery store. Like, oh, we were robbing a grocery store. Everybody in camouflage. And it was, like, all the People Army, you know what I mean, running through this grocery store in Brooklyn on Fulton Street, like, that they rented out, you know what I mean,
yeah.
For us to go through. Just grabbing, like, bags of food, whatever, with Prodigy and Mobb Deep with us.
Right.
And Shabazz Disciple with us. And, like, Lord Jamar there. And, like, just different shit. And me being, like, a kid, just being like, what the fuck?
Right.
I'm in New York City. I'm chasing my dreams. This shit is crazy.
Yeah. I have an embarrassing Dead Prez confession.
Oh, shit.
When I was, like, 18, I made a mixtape for a girl that I liked. And I put Mind Sex on it. And to this day, that I just find that very embarrassing. Because she never let me smash at the time. So, like, I pretty much only got to have Mind Sex. So...
Damn. I want to fuck, no doubt. But tonight we try a different route.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you guys were you guys signed as well then? You were on Loud?
No, we were Alikes. We had a situation with an English label.
How did it go?
It was good in the sense that we got to put out music and we got to travel on the strength of it.
Yeah.
But you know, we were trying to do some big shit. Like, we had visions of grandeur in a justified way. Like, you know, our homies that, you know, had good
you were around people that platform. Were doing big fucking things.
Yeah, man. I was like, yeah, we next.
Yeah.
The difference is, I would say, you know, organization won, but more importantly, the brand of music that we were doing, it was just not I guess in the business model of a label to have a whole collective doing that. Nowadays it makes sense because there's many ways to exploit, if you will, only like using that word, but there's many ways to like find
You can navigate independently nowadays.
Exactly.
And back then, it wasn't really an option.
They were like, look, can you get me some radio records? If not, I ain't got time for y'all. Like, they barely got a radio record from Dead Press.
Right. Like, no one was blowing up off the internet back then. It was like, Napster was around, and you could first start fucking downloading shit, but, like, no one was creating movements on the internet yet, like they are nowadays.
Exactly.
So is the British label pressuring you guys for radio records as well?
Nah, just do what you do. Like, we did our first record that we did a mixtape. We did Unsigned Hype and The Source. And then I remember it was a big thing because Unsigned Hype, you got Mobb Deep, you got Eminem, you got Biggie, you got Common Sense, you got fucking Jay Electronica, Joell Ortiz.
That meant something back then.
All these people, you know, Unsigned Hype. So when we got Unsigned Hype, we were hype, literally. Yeah. And we did a mixtape called Unsigned Hype. Then we had a mixtape, like, we basically took the cover of the Unsigned Hype article and put it as the cover with the, like, you know, the blurb that they put about us, whatever. And we sold that CD, like, you know, at shows and shit. And then we came out with another one, Gorilla Nation. This mixtape time when 50 Cent was killing it and all that. So we're like, yeah, we in that same format. We rapping over other people's tracks, all that. But our first official album that we came out with was Live or Die, which came out on the English record label.
Yeah.
Live or Die was, you know, amazing record. Real proud of it. It's a lot of soul samples when cats weren't using really
what
soul
samples.
What
year was that?
This is like 04. Oh,
okay, yeah, yeah.
Like, cats were still coming over from using other shit. The only cats really, you had Kanye doing his whole soul sample thing. But we had been doing that for, like, you know, since RZA.
Yeah.
Since the 90s. We just like soul samples.
Yeah.
When everybody went Swizz Beatz and even Timbaland and Chase and different artists that were fucking with different instrument machines like the Triton and whatever, we really stuck to that.
Yeah. What else was cracking in 2004? Was that around the time, like, Dipset was starting to get big?
Dipset was getting big.
Yeah.
50 was doing his thing.
Right on the verge.
Rockefeller was like in the midst of like their kind of like coming off of their big shit.
Yeah.
And you know, you had the Down South cats doing a bunch of, you know, then you had also the beginning of like what ended up being the ringtone shit.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Like all the dance songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Laffy Taffy type.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So
have you guys always been able to like stay getting along as a group? Did you guys have any conflicts like that?
Me and my partner in A-Lights?
Yeah, yeah.
We always, we have a genuine respect for each other. Mm-hmm. Enough to be able to, like, say that. And the whole time that we've rocked with each other, you know what I mean? We've kept it 100. But it's insane to even, like, think that it would not, you wouldn't have times where you have.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? You know, y'all building about shit. It's something you're passionate about, this art shit. You know what I mean? Like, being an artist is something that makes people get emotional, and then you know you throwing things back and forth as far as ideas, and sometimes you know we don't get along. But
yeah, absolutely, it becomes like a I don't want to say brotherly relationship, but it's like this thing where sometimes you have to be brothers, and sometimes you have to recognize that you're business partners as well, and so you have to put the emotions aside and such.
True. Yeah. I would say definitely, but. Overall, you know, we still rocking, which is amazing considering that, you know, it's been, you know, other projects involved. There's been like many years involved. And if you look at like the like hip hop history, it's kind of crazy, but a lot of groups just don't make it. Actually, not just hip hop history, but like.
No, that's the thing is like it's very rare. I feel like for a duo or a group or whatever to stay together for as long as it sounds like you guys have been rocking together.
Yeah, exactly. Or even a band like bands. It's egos as artists, you got to balance having a certain amount of ego to be like, yo, this is what I'm bringing to the table.
Right.
Respect that. And it's dope. And
right.
It's me.
Right.
And at the same time, you have to be humble.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, okay, word, that's what you think about it. Well, what about your vision? All that, whatever.
Yeah.
If you can't navigate that on either end, you're going to falter.
Yeah.
So I think that's the problem. You know what I mean? So it's natural in this shit.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Has rap always been the hustle ever since getting out of college? Have you had to have like 9-to-5s or anything?
I mean, I've always had an independent spirit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't like. Everybody has a problem with authority. I really don't like authority. You know what I mean? I don't like having people over me to an extent.
Yeah.
I respect leadership. You know what I mean? But I don't really, you know, be having time for in how I feel with that whole job shit.
Yeah.
So I've done, you know, a bunch of things in it to make ends meet throughout right. my years to do this art. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think that's what a lot of people don't understand is that
we grind for real.
Yeah. And there's all sorts of different hustles. And as an artist, you have to learn a lot of different things that you're good at in order to survive. You know what I mean? To not have a fucking 9-to-5. So.
And I respect people that have 9-to-5s. Yeah. Like, I actually admire it. I used to look at, if you had a 9-to-5, I would actually feel subconsciously sad for you.
Right.
I might not tell you that, but I'm like, you know what? I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
But now I actually feel bad for me.
Like, why is that?
Because I'm like, to be able to follow, you know, a certain structure. I mean, if you're an independent musician, you know what it is. You out, your hours are crazy. You have to kind of like get yourself in a regimen and like almost like it's a struggle to take your shit serious.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? With a 9-to-5 job, it's set for you. You know what right. I mean? For the most part. And I see there's certain skills that you can learn from having a 9-to-5 job for a extended amount of time. Getting up at a certain time.
Right.
On fucking, time. Every day.
As dumb as it sounds, like putting pants on. You know what I'm saying? Like, they tell you
that?
They actually fucking tell you, like, if you work from home, like, getting dressed as if you're going to work will help you be more productive and shit like that, which is crazy. But
shout out to all my 9-to-5 hustlers. I see y'all and I salute y'all.
For sure. So what's up, man? After you leave the schools that you were off at for your childhood, did you hold any grudges against your folks for that shit?
I don't know, man. You know what I mean? I have conversations with my mom about that time. I mean, I'm grown, so I'm chilling, man. Like, I'm not stressing her out about it. But, you know, you think about things. I don't judge my mom or my father for that time. My father wasn't in that space. You know, I was under my mom's care, even though my father was around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was under my mom's care, so that was my mother's decision. So I usually talk to her about it. But she had things that she was trying to do, not like go to the club.
Right.
She was just like, you know what I mean, a young woman with 3 kids in a foreign land.
Yeah.
Trying to figure this shit out without she had like a third grade education.
Yeah.
So you're not getting a big ass like job with a big ass paycheck with that shit. So she would have to work it out. So
it just made sense.
It just made sense, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So tell me about Weekend Money.
Weekend Money started in a Brooklyn basement, a studio called The Brick House. I named it The Brick House after being there for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, it's all a bunch of brick.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing space. It's like a musician's playground. There's a bunch of like drum sets and horns and Fisher-Price xylophones and little transistor things and things that we find and people bring in and fix and organs and many cymbals, all types of stuff.
Yeah.
So we formed there in about 2012.
We is who?
We is me, Ness, any double dollar sign, Poppy Chulo, the MC, the vocalist, and then you have Baghdaddy, my Iraqi comrade, my partner in crime in this Weekend Money thing.
He's the one plunking out the beats.
In title, he's the producer.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes he croons. He's
okay.
a crooner.
Okay.
I also croon.
Yeah.
He croons a little bit more Prince Jackson-esque. Okay. I croon more thuggy.
I love the term croon. I just want to throw that out there, you know?
Because you're not fully belting out songs.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra is a great crooner.
You know, you're just singing your little, you know, your wares.
You know?
But, so it's me and him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How'd you guys meet?
We met at an office party that he worked at this. All right, let's go through this because it's real.
All right.
Gotta figure the shit out. There was a company called Freeverse that both a good friend of mine, Parker, P-R-K-R, this producer, dope dude, good dude. I worked with him many years. Was telling me like, yo, I have this office party for my office. It's called Freeverse. It's an app company. They make apps, video game apps, whatever.
Right, right.
Long story short, yeah, Bag worked there.
Yeah.
And he's
he was making apps.
He was actually making music for the apps.
Okay.
He's a composer for that shit.
Right, right.
So that doom, 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 doom. Somebody has to play that shit.
Right, right, right.
And they had an office party, Christmas party.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, yo, come through. We need you to come through. Need some weed. was like, oh, show, I'll come through. Yeah. So anyway, I came through and we had a conversation about music. Parker was like, this is the guy I was telling you about. He had all these different, like, you know, whatever, tracks. And I was looking for, like, electro music.
Yeah.
Something a little bit different than just hip-hop.
Right.
Something.
Because you seem like you're somebody who's aware of things that are happening. You're probably fucking, you see what's happening in the music world.
Well, at the time, I was working on actually a project, and it was just trying to take it back to the beginning of hip hop when you had shit like what Afrika Bambaataa was doing.
Right.
Like, all right, we have no, there's no boundaries, no limitations. We could put anything together. Let's do it.
Right.
So I was in that space, and then I got into some more electro shit, and I was just like, let's move.
Yeah. And so when did you guys click pretty instantly or what?
Yeah, Bag's cool, dude. He can.
Did something come out of the first studio sessions you guys made? Like, did you click musically easily?
We had an interview recently where Bag said that the first thing we did ended up becoming a song. So I'm gonna say yeah.
Okay.
But I remember at first just listening to each other's stuff.
Yeah.
And just filling each other out. And right. I think the first pause. I think the next like few sessions we were kind of still like trying to figure out like, all right, what are you trying to do? What do you want to do? And initially I was going to work on some tracks for his instrumental project that he was working on. And he was going to give me some beats for my project. Like that was going to be the trade off. And then we did our first record, this song called Insomniac.
Uh-huh.
And it was dope. And he loved it. Went crazy.
Yeah.
It was like, yo, this is amazing. You're talking real shit. You're talking like to your mom, but you're talking about hustling. There's a lot of things going on in this song. So I was like, all right, sure, I'm with it.
Is he somebody who has a lot of... the thing that I really liked about the record when I listened to it was that, like, synesthesia-wise, it has a lot... When I close my eyes and listen, the beats have a lot of different colors to them. Like, they make me have different feelings, you know what I'm saying?
I understand.
But... at the same time, since it is one producer, they're very cohesive, and it feels like you can tell that they're all made by the same dude. Does he have a lot of different styles where it's like, because I feel like the beats on the record, they're very modern sounding, like we were talking about previously. Like they have the machine gun hi-hats, they have the 808s, they have that kind of down south bounce to it.
Mm-hmm.
I hate saying trap beats, but you know what I mean? Like that's that, to the layman, that's what they would probably call them.
Trappy.
So what I'm saying is, does he have different styles as well that you guys were playing with?
Well, the stuff that kind of came out on our last project was kind of our continued experiment. You know, we were playing with different sounds, different drum patterns.
Yeah.
A lot of times, like, I'll come in and I'll be like, yo, I was hearing this drum pattern, and it would go like, doom, 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 or whatever the fuck, right? And then he'll play with where he's coming from, and then we'll come up with something that's... Weekend Money.
Yeah.
But I would say, ultimately, we got mad shit.
Yeah.
We got trappy things that sound more like machine gun hi-hat shit like that. Then we got more musical things, like a joint we got called Left Me Open that sounds like some almost like, you know, new wave pop type shit. Then we got things like Ugg, which was on the first record on Freddie Mercury, which is like... sounds dubby, even though I don't like dubstep, but it sounds dubby-ish, electro, stepped-out shit.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that comes from Weekend Money, just to keep it very real, is like, it's kind of like almost like a joke, if you will, but not a joke. It's almost like, let's see what the fuck we could do next that could make somebody say, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah.
But within the context of still making a song and being in the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you could just be weird and crazy and zany and out there, and they have no context in real life. It doesn't draw no emotions from you. It doesn't have a place in the world. It doesn't, nothing. It could just be like, we're crazy. You know, I screamed the whole record, and the record said, da-da-da-da. But if you could, like, tell a story, but the music is pushing, you know, on some progressive, like, it's boom bap in it. I hear that, but I hear the trap elements. I hear, you know what I mean? If you could, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's something that's important for what me and Bag come together to do. And me personally, like, I would like to create something new if there's anything new under the sun left.
Right, right. That's a hard thing to do.
They say there's nothing under the sun. Nothing new under this bitch.
I've heard that. But, you know, they also say fucking doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is the definition of insanity. So I'm glad that you guys are trying something different. And it's like I told you when we first started talking, is like the thing that I really liked about the project when I heard it is that while it sounds modern and sounds relevant and sounds aware, I could also fucking tell that it's grounded in skill and hours of work that have been put in. I didn't know the backstory about ALX and all that. And so it didn't surprise me at all to hear that you've been rapping for a long time, because you can hear it in the records, like you fucking know how to rap. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Thank you.
And I can tell that Baghdaddy has been producing for quite a while and has very strong musical talent. So if you guys are out there listening, go check out the record, Freddie Mercury. It's on your SoundCloud, right?
Yes, sir.
How do you find that?
SoundCloud.com/weekendmoney.
Mm-hmm.
One word.
Spelled the right way?
Yeah, spelled properly. Not like the weekend with no E. And
yeah,
shit.
You know what I mean? Like some people like to get it a little funky.
That's like, this is like podcast beef.
Yeah.
Like you ain't got no E on your name, dog. I hear you.
Nah, so SoundCloud.com/weekendmoney. Where can they find you on Twitter?
I am on Nestagram, Nestagram. On Twitter and Instagram. But if you want to check us out, Weekend Money.
Twitter.com/weekendmoney.
Weekend_money, because
weekend_money.
There's a fucker out there with the Weekend Money that
you
won't
bastard.
Give it to us.
You bastard. Give it to him for a reasonable price.
Pause.
Yeah. you're much better at the pause game than me. Fuck.
Oh, man. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's actually done. I'm just continuing it just to be stupid.
No, it cracks me up, though. You guys have some videos on YouTube together. Yeah.
We got a bunch of videos. Check us out.
Yeah, just Google YouTube Weekend Money.
Yeah, Weekend Money. Just put Weekend Money in the thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the search column.
I'll tell you, like, my suggested track to all of you guys, look up Trapper Keeper. That is my fucking jam. I actually put that on a mix for myself because I just love that song.
Yo, shout out to Fat Tony.
Yeah,
shout
Fat
out
Tony.
To Hot Sugar.
He lives out here now, right?
Fat Tony? He be out here a lot.
Actually, we had Hot Sugar on the show.
Out here?
Yeah. We had Hot Sugar on the show. I think that's actually how Tony, who hit me up, found out about Kinda Neat was because of Hot Sugar. And Kitty. We had Kitty on as well.
Hot Sugar's dope. Kitty's the homie. She's dope.
You know, both of those podcasts and videos were like two of my favorites. They're really great people. So,
oh, man, I wonder what they had on that shit.
Hot Sugar's interview was fucking great, dude. But I can say the same thing for yours. This is a great interview, so I thank you so much for coming in.
As I levitate.
Yeah, he is. He's doing the yoga pose and levitating, breathing fire.
Yeah.
So my name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you can find me on Twitter at It's Intuition. My man, Ben Shin, behind the boards, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, space with two S's.
Silver Lake.
We are in this hot-ass studio in Atwater Village at Cosmic Zoo, which is at Cosmic Zoo, spelled properly.
Weekend.
You can find everything wrapped up in a pretty package on kindofneat.net. And be sure to go to youtube.com/thatskindofneat, where we're going to see my man Ness perform a song. What are you going to perform?
We will see.
We'll find out.
Surprise.
He's going to play something off of the Freddie Mercury LP. Remember, download that podcast app. Subscribe to That's Kinda Neat. Or subscribe to Kinda Neat. 5-star ratings. Leave a comment. Tell Ben how handsome his new haircut is. And I don't know. I think that's it, man. You got anything else?
Weekend Money.
Weekend Money.
Yeah. A's up. You know what it is.
There you go. That was Kinda Neat.
Thank you, man.